Welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Today we have Stephen Fink on the show from, well, Vice President of IT. I always wonder how these titles work too. We've got Vice President of IT, CTO, CIO. We should probably come up with a what's the difference between all of these someday at Fenner Precision Polymers. A polymer. What is a polymer, by the way? We should start off with that.
Well, you're starting out with the hard-hitting questions. A polymer is a mixture of compounds. I don't know the technical definition of it, but it's a mixture of compounds that we apply to fabrics. We make hoses out of them. We make belting out of them. You know, space polymers. It's kind of all the rage these days.
So maybe I don't know, bulletproof vest, could that be a polymer? I wonder, can we do that? No, probably. Tires.
I don't know.
I'm in IT, Phil. Stop calling. This isn't a show about polymers, Phil. If this was a show about polymers,
things, man.
Like, look, I make sure that the machines work that make the polymers. That's the important thing. So, Vice President of IT. We'll start out with the second, an easier question then. We'll do the second question, which is, what was your first computer?
Oh, an Apple II. Apple II. Yeah. And then I got an Apple IIc shortly after that.
Wow. Apple IIc was my first one. No, was it? No. No, it wasn't. It was Texas Instruments. If you could count that as a computer.
Yeah.
And, you know. Later on,
that one didn't bring me a whole lot of joy. The II was really kind of what got its hooks into me.
Okay. So what happened?
The TI, I was with an engineer neighbor of mine who was teaching me about computer things, and he had this thing, and it seemed like it didn't ever really work as well as I wanted it to, or him trying to keep it running for me didn't take as much time as I thought it should. I thought it should be easier, and then the Apple IIc came out, and it just kind of worked. So it got me into that. And of course, you know, War Games was coming out. So I had to write, the shall we play a game command prompts with the chess and the global thermonuclear war option. And it kind of went all downhill from there.
Remember, what were some of the crazier movies that came out back then?
I like that one. I like Sneakers. Sneakers was a great one.
Weird Science.
Weird Science was a good one.
I don't even think we even knew what the modem coupler, what was that phone coupler thing? Why can't I remember what that was called? Did you have that?
Yeah, I had one of those, a little, a 14.4K baud, modem coupler. Yeah, it started out with like 4,800, went to 9,600 was after that. And then 14.4 was like super fast.
Let's keep going down this memory lane. This is beautiful. So you had an Apple IIc. Well, we had... How'd you end up in technology? Because it wasn't a thing back then. Back then it was like, yeah, you got to go to computer class. You got to learn how to word process, save your paper, print it, rip the little things off the side of the dot matrix paper. It was a necessary thing, but was it really a thing yet? It was.
It was kind of emerging. Yeah. With the Apples coming out, took AP computer science in high school. I was fortunate enough to have a high school.
And an AP computer science class?
Yeah, believe it or not. But the strange thing was the students kind of knew more about computer science than the football coach that had, you know, picked this up for a little side gig. And so we were teaching him more computers than he was teaching us. But it was fun, man. We were all hanging out and trying to figure out how we could write different programs and getting into a little bit of graphics. And I was also getting into stereos back then. So I'd like draw a picture of a stereo and then move it around the screen and, you know, just super advanced, useful stuff.
You were a CIO in 1996.
Yeah, started a software company in 96. Started a Shop Floor Solutions was the name of it. And we were going to bridge the gap between ERP systems and the factory floor, because ERP systems are fantastic for calculating and computing and crunching and dissecting data, but they are notoriously bad for collecting data and giving data to the people that need it, when they need it, where they need it. So we kind of created a company to slide in there and fill that gap and bring that data down to the shop floor, collect data straight from the shop floor, and get involved in barcoding and some other stuff like that.
That's super nerdy. I always thought ERPs were just known for just being bad, period. Is there a good ERP story? It sounds like it's almost like Tales from the Crypt or something, you know?
Yeah. I think ERP systems, they get a bad rap because they're complicated because they have to be complicated. And then because they kind of have to do everything to run an entire business and manufacturing and scheduling and invoicing and, you know, you name it, it's got to do it. And then every company thinks that they have to do it their own specific way because that's kind of their secret sauce. Mm-hmm. Trying to make an ERP system that's built to go one way, conform into a company that's been doing it the same way for the past X years. The company doesn't want to change to conform to the ERP system, and the ERP system doesn't want to conform to the company, so it ends up...
Imagine if we could do that. Maybe we should just change. Maybe that should be the mission. Maybe the mission should be, look, every company should use the ERP system a certain way. We're just going to standardize it, and everyone should change and do business this way, and just fit your... You're not special. Your idea is special, technology doesn't need to be special.
I think the more and more we get down the road, I think more companies are realizing that. I think, so many disaster stories with ERPs, putting into them millions and millions of dollars. And finally they say, well, why do we have to do it this way? You know, why don't we just do it the way the ERP system works? Because manufacturing is manufacturing. You know, we've got our own special algorithms and our special formulations that go into what we do. But, you know, the overarching process is still similar enough to where you can probably use it to do what you need it to do.
So seeing many nightmares, I'm assuming you've seen plenty over the years.
I've seen quite a few, yeah.
What's the worst one? Is there one we can talk about that's not even around anymore and doesn't even exist, so it doesn't matter?
Gracious. The one that I like the best is when we're doing business, putting an ERP system in for a multinational corporation that will remain nameless. And they put this system in and it's running fabulously. And we have everything that's being automated in all of their warehouses and all of their manufacturing plants. And then they get a new CIO that comes in and says, well, I don't like that ERP system. We're going to go to SAP. So they pull the plug on everything that's working well, shove SAP in place, costs, you know, tens of millions of dollars. The functionality is not the same. They lose a lot of the stuff that they had automated. And at the end of the day, they figure out that, well, maybe that wasn't the best idea. And they turn around, they go to yet another ERP system because SAP was just, you know, too expensive. You know, nothing against SAP, but anytime you're going to change an ERP system, it takes effort. And you got to know what you're getting into. So,
at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, We are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
So how does a decision like that happen? Who should be stepping in there and saying, really, really stop doing this? You're jumping off a cliff. Really don't do this. It's a bad decision. How do decisions like that happen?
Oh, man, that's a complicated question. I think that sometimes you get very well-meaning people that find the budget and they decide that they want to put in what they feel is the best solution for the money that they have, which, you know, that's not a bad thing. But does it meet the needs of the business? Does it meet the needs of the users? You know, is it going to get you farther down the road and bring you value that you need?
I'm just wondering if there's questions like foresight questions that we should be asking here. There's
absolutely. So, you know, expounding on that a little bit further, I think you always have to figure out what is the impact to the user going to be and kind of start from there. You know, is it going to improve the user's experience and then bring that value back? Yeah, spending money to do IT just because you have an IT budget isn't necessarily the smartest long-term career move.
Well, there had to have been some reasoning behind, like, we got to go SAP. Is it just because it's a big name?
It is a big name. They have fabulous marketing. They're running a lot of the world's biggest companies. And a lot of times what you'll find is you'll get smaller companies that think, well, you know, if it's good enough for company X, it's got to be good for my company too, when it could be overkill.
Was there a problem that needed to be fixed?
Not that I was aware of. Now, I have to admit that I was on the integrator side of that equation of the story that I just told. So I don't know exactly how they wound up in that situation. But viewed from the outside, it looked as though, you know, we got a new CEO that came in who lives firmly in the SAP camp. So he wanted to go SAP, and away they go.
Yeah, my favorite meme is a dumpster fire where it says SAP implementation going strong.
Oh, I'm not going to badmouth SAP. They've got a great system, but they are complicated.
No, love it. If you can do it right, you can do it right.
So, and I think part of it too is, you know, you got to know what you're doing before you just say, hey, we're going to go and you know, just slap this thing in here without knowing everything about it.
No, one of my colleagues, Josh Milos over at Birkenstock, he came on the podcast years ago, and he was the SAP guy. Yeah, and he did it. He did it well. He did very, very well. And now he's the, I don't know, VP of IT or CTO or CIO or whatever, because he did it well. Yeah. Right. So I'm not a negative proponent of any given vendor, although no, yes, I am. I'm definitely a negative proponent of many vendors, but it, not in this case. In this case, there's not I guess a software solution or a vendor solution that is a one size fits all, right? Every company is a different company with a different set of end users or the different set of goals or the different set of, you know, issues and stuff that all should be on one ERP system working this exact same way. So that's the problem, right?
Yeah.
That's why we exist.
Absolutely.
So back in time again, high school advanced placement,
computer science.
I mean, where'd you go from there? Did we go to college and do computer stuff? And what was your first job? I mean, what was your first computer job?
So I did go to school for computer science. Back in the day, Furman had two different computer science courses.
Yes.
One was computer science for people who knew math and loved math, and the other was for computer science for people who liked business. And I was more on the business side, so I went to Furman for a computer science business degree. While I was in my junior year, I actually got a job working for a large construction company that's located right up the road. I was working in their help desk area, trying to take support tickets and things like that. So that was a little bit of fun. But then I got a job as a programmer analyst.
What was help desk like back then, though? Like, what were the tickets like coming in? Like, my printer doesn't work. Like, well,
that was pretty much it. Yeah,
that's it, right? Like, what could you have possibly had to do? Like,
no, that was
format my hard drive and reload DOS.
There wasn't any DOS. It's, hey, my doesn't work. I can't connect to my mainframe, and my printer doesn't work. And you're sitting in this big computer room that's 19 degrees below zero, waiting for the phone to ring. So. That's what I did as a college student for a little while.
Please describe that room a little bit more. I have to know how dark this. What was this? Please describe this lair. I must know.
I'm trying to think of the best way to put it. It. I mean, if you think of a
it was like the high school locker room without any.
No. Nice. I mean, they had lots of glass. They had like an elevated floor that was nice and white.
Brilliant.
The air conditioner worked extremely well. Had to keep that mainframe cold, you know.
Really, it's wild. It's great. Meanwhile, I was working at Jim's Wings or something, you know. You have varsity cheerleader on here. This is excellent. Did you have to throw people up in the air?
I did. Or
get thrown in the air.
I didn't really get thrown in the air. The farthest I ever got was like on somebody's shoulders. That's not as far up in the air as I got, but we went to nationals, took second place in nationals. And then
I used to be like, I'll never marry a cheerleader. I used to say that. Now I'm married to the captain of the cheerleading team that went to all those competitions and everything. So,
oh, that's so funny.
She would, shout out to my wife, Monique. You would appreciate this episode. We're talking about cheerleading. This is the first, I don't know what episode this is going to be. It might be close to episode 300, but we're talking about cheerleading, honey. I think you'd appreciate that.
I knew that experience would come in handy one day, so finally.
Okay, I don't even know how to segue. How do we even segue off of that? How do you, I don't know, build a good team, hire good people? What's the key to, how big of a team you got over there?
In the IT department, we got 17.
That's big.
Yeah, we're spread across basically a few locations. I've got one guy who's a BI guy just up the road in Charlotte. I've got two teams of people up in Mannheim in our corporate headquarters. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure team based out of Mannheim, and then the enterprise apps team is based out of Mannheim. Mm-hmm. And then we've got a UK team where we've got four people in the UK that are supporting our European operations.
Excellent. What's the key to running this whole thing?
The key is your people. You got to be there for your people. You got to understand what they need to succeed, and then help them to knock down roadblocks. You know, block and tackle, get out there in front of them. You know, make sure that they know the direction that you want to go as the leader, and that the direction you want to go as the leader is the direction that the business needs. And then, you know, do everything you can to help them to succeed.
How do you do that? Do you guys have like a living, breathing mission statement? Do you have like a, I don't know, weekly cheerleading session? What do we do?
Now, our mission statement is the Finner IT organization exists to make it better to do business with and to work at Finner. So part of what we do, of course, is, you know, making sure my printer works, my computer works and things like that. But, you know, we're really trying to make sure that we're making an impact in our customers' lives and our end users' lives. So if we can come up with solutions that make things better in their jobs, that make them easier to do business with us, then we're being successful.
Give me some examples. Like what's some of the just, if you had a gold standards checklist or a daily routine or a thing that we would put in the employee handbook that was like the golden rules of IT, would it be like, I don't know, meet with 5 end users a week and ask them what they hate about IT. And I mean, you know, what's your biggest frustration, problem, or concern when it comes to dealing with I don't know, technology in this company and then fix it? I mean, what's the gold standard? What would be on the list?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm relatively new in this role. I've been with Michelin Group for coming up on 15 years, but I've only been with Fenner for coming up on a year, and I've only been the VP of IT since just before Thanksgiving, and it's currently only March. So it's only been, you know, 5 months that I've been in this role.
So you're drinking from the fire hose, kind of.
I am a little bit, but part of that is you got to really kind of do your first world tour. So you go out and you meet with all the different leaders, you meet with all the different groups, you just wander through the factories and the facilities, you introduce yourself and you say, okay, letter to Santa Claus, what can IT do for you? You don't promise anything. You say, I'm just trying to figure out where are your pain points. You know, what is it that you're frustrated with? Do you think we're doing a good job? Do you think we're not doing a good job? And then how do we try to build on that to go forward together? So, you know, a lot of what we're hearing now is people want more access to data. So we have a program in place now where we are trying to standardize our data platform, and give that access to people, democratize it, make sure that people understand, you know, how to get to it. You know, 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, Microsoft Excel was used by engineers, and that was about it, because, you know, it was like the tool for really smart people that you know, needed to come in there and do formulas and stuff like that. And now it's running, you know, businesses around the world. So BI is really the next wave of Microsoft Excel, you know, trying to get the aptitude and the competencies in the hand of the people that need it so they can go find out what they need so they can make their own business decisions.
Excellent. So take this information in, do the world tour. How does this translate into possibly, well, I guess just what does it translate into? Does it make it to a road mapping thing or, you know, anything like that?
Yeah. So what I did early on is I had we called it a jumpstart for our IT organization. After I kind of did the world tour and tried to figure out what's going on within the organization, I had a jumpstart and said, okay, this is Steven's vision of where we want to go. So this is my unconstrained roadmap. And I laid out kind of everything that I thought we needed to address, knowing that we can't do it all in, you know, 2024, maybe not even in 2025. But charting the course for where I thought we needed to go. In line with Michelin's principles, I broke it down into three different sections. You have people, you have planet, and you have profit. So for the people aspect, you know, how is it that we can make sure that our IT people are getting the skills that they need, that they are understanding that they are a valued part of the organization? They're not just there to fix printers, but, you know, we rely on their creativity. We rely on their problem solving. We rely on their thinking out of the box and being able to come up with solutions to make the business better. How is it that we can leverage that and make sure that they keep that curiosity, that they get their skills refined, that they're going deeper in their skills, and also that they that we know what they want to do? I mean, you get some people in IT and they're happy doing the same thing for the next 20 years. They just want to do the same thing. You get other people that say, no, you know, Steven, I want to be in your seat in 10 years or something like that. So you got to figure out for each of your employees what makes them tick and where can they contribute the most. So that's part of the people. The other part of the people is making sure that we are engaging with people outside of the organization. So making sure that we as a group are having touch points with other people from the business saying, hey, how can we help you? Every once in a while, just ask them, hey, do you have a process that takes you 5 hours every week that you wish you could be more efficient doing? Have us have a look at it. You know, if we can help you, great. If we can't, then we understand more of your pain point. Maybe something will come to us farther down the road. Mm. So, you know, making sure that the people remain upfront and always keep them in mind to what we're trying to accomplish. On the profit, we've currently got four different ERP systems because we got so many different sites around the world. We've acquired different companies. One ERP system was written in-house on a technology stack that's been obsolete now for going on 10, 15 years. So, you've got the normal IT stuff with obsolescence and upgrades and remaining current and things like
antiquated
that.
Antiquated silos sitting on their own. Yes.
So you better have a roadmap with what you're going to do with all of that. So that was part of it. You know, how are we going to do that? We've got 8 different EDI vendors. How can we consolidate that? Try to streamline our support, what we have to do to support it, and also our costs. So then also for the profit segment, you're looking at how can we help our business be more profitable in what they're doing? You know, expanding the use of Salesforce, expanding the use of the different parts of the ERP system that are currently underutilized, trying to expand our usage of barcoding and automation and scanners and MES in the factories and in the warehouses. You know, these are all things that can improve the lives of our employees and make us more profitable as a company because we can do things better. We're capacity constrained in some areas, and if we can move product through faster through automation, then we're really getting a leg up on that.
What's your strongest partnership in the company? Advice. I'm asking advice now, kind of like how do you, I mean, obviously, I'm assuming you're measuring KPIs. I'm assuming there's, you know, you're able to measure and show savings and results and efficiencies, and these type of things are important. What's your most important partnerships, politically speaking, right? And I don't mean like politics in a negative sense. I just mean like what kind of relationships, and this is advice to other people listening to the show, what kind of relationships should people be establishing and building?
I think that I am able to enjoy a certain access to people based on Fenner's realization that IT is important to the organization. So if I were just a CIO, it is very possible, even likely, that I would not have a seat at the executive table to have all the insights and all the discussions with all of the other business leaders. You know, we have a touch point weekly. We have an all-day session at least monthly, plus other workshops and things like that that we're doing where we're talking about business issues, where we're talking about, you know, how is it that we can try to streamline different things, where we can either look at the process just from a process standpoint, or, you know, can we do something with computers to help this out? Can we look at technology to start helping this out? So I think that because of the vice president title, I have access to all of those business leaders. Within Fenner, we have 3 different product families. Each of those have their, you know, their own products that they're trying to develop. They have their own organizations. They have their own needs for reporting. We've also got our compliance officer that we're working on some pretty important initiatives with them. It's getting more and more complicated to do business the more time goes by with all of the environmental regulations that are in place, the compliance things. You got to have all your declarations from your suppliers and your customers want declarations. It gets really complicated. So that's a very key aspect of what we do as a business. But it also means that there's a lot of things that we need to work side by side with them to make sure that that their needs are covered and that our business is covered.
It is amazing all the things that are manufactured and need to be manufactured in the world. Mm. I'm on your website right now. It's amazing. Link belts, keyless bushings, couplings, polyurethane belts, tensioners, pulleys, idlers, carriage rollers, and sprockets. Sprockets. Literally sprockets. Mounting adapters, bearings, 3D printing materials, and more. I mean, the stuff that must be manufactured, just belts alone. It's just amazing all the little things that need to be manufactured in the world, period. And yes, the amount of technology behind it's insane.
Yeah, and our product portfolio is just completely vast, as you just mentioned. We've got stuff that's made out of steel. We've got stuff rubber and polyurethane and, you know, advanced polymers, if I can use that word again, that we don't know the exact definition of. You know, we've got some, literally, we've got space age fabrics, you know, stuff that, can be used in space and aeronautics and defense, You name it, it's all over the place.
What is the what's the end game for IT people? I don't know what it is. I don't know if we really know what it is. Many of the IT people grew up in a world where it was, 19 below zero in the mainframe room. And I don't know, there just wasn't an end game. It wasn't like, I'm going to go into IT. And, you know, I don't know, you were the kids in class that were smarter than the football player teacher guy that came in. So what's the end game in a space that's so evolving so fast? It's wild. It's really wild. My kids don't know. They don't know. They grew up with an iPhone. You know, they had an iPhone in their hand from day one. We remember phones with cords stuck in the walls and floppy disks. And like you said, there was no hard drive. Yeah. Once you had a hard drive, you had a hard drive. It's mind blowing to me. It all happened in the last, 3 decades or so.
Yeah. It's crazy. Is there an end game? I don't know that there is. I think that, you know,
I'm going to die in the server room.
Yeah. I hope not. I have better places to die. That's
what I'm saying. No, but I, you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, what is the, you know, it's like cash out my 401k. I don't know if that's really like, is that really an option?
I think for IT, the key for me in IT, and whether that brings you success or not, is to make sure that you stay involved in something that you enjoy. And if you don't, you know, you need to get out.
you need to get out fast because you're gonna be real miserable.
I mean, you will be. You're gonna be the kid that's like, the old man yelling at kids to get off his lawn. You're gonna be that IT support guy that's being, crungy and hey, you stop using my printer, you know, whatever. But just stay curious, stay hungry, try to stay. I won't say current because, you know, in order to stay current, you need to pick an expertise. If you really want to be super current on something, you need to be super focused. I kind of lost that maybe 15 years ago. I went out of the, I'm going to be an expert in what I do to, I'm going to be more diverse and try to understand more about everything and less about one thing, if that makes any sense. So
no, it does, because if you're going to do security, like security, for example.
Yeah. So cybersecurity, super important. We've got a couple brilliant guys in our organization that they work on cybersecurity. I understand the importance of it. I understand the keywords. I understand, some of the things that need to go on behind the scenes.
Security, we need to do it, guys. Come on, do it. All right. Yeah, you're in charge of security. Come on, let's go.
But I mean, if you said, Steven, you know, you need to go enforce cybersecurity on this network, you know, connection or something like that, I'd be like, I don't even know where to start right now. 10 years ago, I might have, but it's changed so much that I can't stay current of everything that's within the domain of knowledge of IT.
No, that's where we need why we need strong teams.
Absolutely.
That's why the company with the one IT guy, I run into it still. I still run into some companies with, oof, man, what, maybe 500 end users to 1,000 that still got maybe one guy running the show somehow. So it does happen. It does. Like, we're fine. We don't, what do you mean? We've only got a T1 running the whole place. So we're good. What's going to happen? No one can hack us. They're miserable. They move on to somebody else. We're on Lotus Notes. So yeah. They'll run into it. Yeah. Lotus Notes. We should have I would love to find IT guy with the oldest infrastructure in existence right now. I should go on a mission to find that. I want the oldest antiquated silos that are still running.
Something off of a 486 DX266 or something.
There's plenty of IBM, what do we got? AS400s running out there. I ran into the oldest one I ran into was a server that with the cover off of it, with a fan pointing at it running. And when I asked why they hadn't changed it out there, I was like, because there's a physical soldering of something on the motherboard that does not allow it to be migrated to, like, you couldn't, like, there's like some physical aspect to the actual machine itself that could not be replicated ever. Mm. I was like, so what happens like when it goes down? They're like, we just hope it doesn't. We lose everything. We lose the database. It's like, are you crazy? Like, move on.
Let's hope their DR plan is up to date.
That's where they need new SAP guy. They need a guy to come in and be like, nope, we're going SAP.
Yep. Absolutely.
And, yes. And let's see, what else do we have in that one? At least 28 points of failure and loopbacks into the network, causing crazy slow speeds. It was very interesting. It was fun. 10 by 100 switches mixed in with 100. It's good. It was a nonprofit, so it made sense.
Well, so, nonprofit means no income usually too. So you do what you got to.
Yes, yes.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
Advice to people growing up in the space, new IT leaders, people moving from, I don't know, they're new. They're drinking from the fire hose. Oh, yes, we do this. They need to do the world tour first. Talk with people. Do a jump start.
Yep, it's all about connections. It's all about understanding what is out there to be done, and then starting to try to organize your thoughts on how do you logically try to attack that. You can't eat an elephant in one bite. You can't boil the ocean. So figure out what water you do want to boil and what part of the elephant seems the most tasty at the time.
I love that. I tell it to my kids all the time. And they're like, damn, I'm so sick of all your like dad isms or whatever. I say, you know, what did I say? Like, and what do I always tell them? I say, you know, an ingenuine smile is a lot better than a genuine frown or something like that. And, yeah, is that right? Is that how the saying goes? Something like that. But then I ask them that. Huh?
I haven't heard that one, but I like it.
Yeah. Do you know that? So there's how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? But then there's how do you put an elephant in a refrigerator?
That I don't know.
You open the door and put it in.
Oh, okay.
I was like, one bite at a time. It's like, oh, Dad, what do you mean? It's not going to fit. You got to cut it up, and you got to all this stuff. Like, anyways, we must have something. What did you do prior to the? We need something. What's the? We need some quote or something. We need what's the quote of the day?
Quote of the day. I didn't know I was supposed to come with my own quotes.
No, I'm just making this up off the top of my head. We could go with what'd you do outside prior to the internet being invented. It could be favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. What do we got? I don't know. It could be any of those.
I think that people who do IT also tend to find other passions that they like. Like one of my co-founders, he was actually an electrical engineer by trade, and then did some industrial engineering, and then got into computers. But he's like the repository of all knowledge. So if you ever need a guy in a trivia game, you need to call him up, because you know, he knows a little bit about just about everything, but his knowledge of cars really impresses me. So I can buy a car, it doesn't matter what kind of car, and he'll tell me, oh yeah, that shares the same platform as this other car, but they changed the engine to this and that and the other, and then you need to do something or other to it, you know, to make sure it's going to do okay. True story, I bought a 1986 Porsche 944 last year. And this guy has never had one. Okay. And I called him and I said, yeah, I can't get my sunroof open. He goes, oh yeah, that's a common problem, because you know, it's got a switch relay that comes up through the dashboard, and sometimes that connector in there, it's got like a physical connector that you gotta get in there and make that connector. It's like, how do you even know that? You've never even Well, yeah, I read about it on an automotive forum, and you know, just sticks in his brain. So it's, you know, his deal is he's just passionate about cars and, you know, how stuff works. And that keeps him young outside of talking about computers. And
I wish I was that good with cars. My son-in-law is in, he has a master's in electrical engineering. He's a car guy. He's a car guy too. He like, you know, I'm remodeling my basement. And he's remodeling his basement at the same time. I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm calling the electrician. And he's like, I just put in a whole new sub panel. I'm like, what? I was like, is that even the code? He's like, I got the code book. I just looked it up. He's like, I already know how to do all this stuff. He's like, you know, I'm like, he's like the massive like wire, like not the like the wire that I'm scared of. That's like, I don't even know how to describe it's how thick this wire is. It's like the size of a Coke can coming into your, you know, yeah, I just rubbed this sub panel and then we did this. I'm like, what? And I'm like, yeah, that's, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that. That's too much electricity for me. But he's same thing with his cars. He's very good with cars and doing all that stuff too. So
as long as it's mechanical, I'm all right. But once it gets into the electrical, I can't see electrical. So that confuses me a little bit.
You can't see it. True. It is invisible.
Yeah. It hurts. I mean,
greatest invention of, I would have to say that's the greatest invention. It has to be electricity. That's a finding. No, electricity's not an invention. That's a finding. Light bulb, I guess. Steven, it has been a pleasure having you on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Any final words of wisdom, advice to fellow IT colleagues out there?
I would say, remember, IT is about people. IT just, you know, to go do cool things with computers is really great and fun. But if you're not doing it for the people and to make their lives better, then you're kind of missing the game. And stay curious. I mean, the field is huge. It's vast. There's so many different things you can do with it. You know, keep at it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds.
My pleasure.